Hey there, podcast listeners. Scott Weingart here for the MCrit podcast. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Or if you celebrate my favorite wintertime holiday, happy solstice. We're at the end of 2011, and I figured I'd finish it off with a trauma topic. I'm a trauma guy, and we haven't done much trauma this year on the MCrit podcast. Let's change that. Let's talk about cervical spine trauma. Now, I know what you folks want. I know my listeners. I know you M-critters. You want the critical care stuff. You want to know how to manage neurogenic shock. You want to know about intubating the C-spine fracture patient. But, just like Pink Floyd says, you can't have your pudding unless you eat your meat. Let's start off with the meat. And the meat, my friends, is the diagnosis of cervical spine fractures. So let's get to it, and we'll get this out of the way. And then, in the new year, we could talk about the critical care management of a confirmed cervical spine injury patient. The thing about cervical spine evaluation is we really have two competing objectives. The first is to diagnose every significant injury, and then the second is to avoid, as much as possible, having to image the patient. We know radiation is bad, and as you will hear shortly, plain films probably are not effective, which means if we do image, it's going to be a CT scan right at the neck, bam, right where that thyroid lives. So if we could avoid it, let's do it. And you folks all know the first way to avoid imaging, and that's the Nexus criteria published in the New England Journal. Hoffman and his crew, huge practice-changing article. And yet, even though it's been in emergency medicine for quite some time now, people don't really know the components of this. Now, they could rattle off the actual steps. You have to get a cervical spine x-ray unless the patient has no posterior midline C-spine tenderness. They have no evidence of intoxication. They have a normal level of alertness, no focal neurological deficit, and no painful distracting injuries. They might be able to come up with some words that describe each of those parts, but for the most part, people have not delved into what they actually mean, and they might very well be missing C-spine injuries as a result, because each of these has little idiosyncrasies you must be fully aware of. So let's go through the list. We'll start off with what would seem to be the easy one. No evidence of intoxication. Now, what is that? Well, we all know that you don't clear the C-spine of an inebriated patient, but that means they can't have the odor of alcohol as well. If you convince yourself this guy's sober, but he smells of beer, he can't be cleared. Read the original article. You'll find that there. So the patient basically needs to be pristine in their sobriety, not smelling of a brewery, in order to pass that one. The next one is a normal level of alertness. Everyone misses this one. Everyone thinks that means GCS of 15, and it does, but it's more. It's more than just GCS of 15. The patient needs to be A&O times 3, alert and oriented, but it's more than that. In the original study, they needed to be able to remember 3 objects at 5 minutes. Now, am I sitting there and showing the patient a pen, a button, and my lab coat and saying, remember these at 5 minutes? I'm not. Maybe I should be, but I don't have time for that. But I am using that as a criteria for the patient needs to be more than just able to tell me their name and where they are in the day of the week. They need to be really, really with it. They need to be 100% concentrating on what I am saying to them in order for them to be cleared by Nexus. 3 objects at 5 minutes. How many of your trauma patients you just cleared would have been able to remember 3 objects at 5 minutes. And they need to have no delayed or inappropriate response to external stimuli. They can't be a little bit slow. They can't be a little bit off, and they can't be a little bit sleepy. If you have to wake them up in order to do your C-spine clearance, they're probably not ready to be cleared. No focal neurological deficit. We usually all get those right. Those are neuro findings. They're objective. They're hard. We know how to do that. And then we come to the real bugaboo. No painful, distracting injuries. What the heck does that mean? Nobody knows. And that's the problem. Why can't we find objective clinical decision rules? The whole point of them is that we shouldn't have to use clinical judgment. The clinical judgment should be the pre-test probability that got us to decide whether we could use the clinical decision rule. The clinical decision rule should be objective. Why does Wells have, is this the most likely cause of the patient's symptoms for PE clearance? It just drives me nuts, but this is what we have to work with. So, no painful, distracting injury. What does that mean? Well, there's some guidance from the original study. If the patient has a long bone fracture, if they have a visceral injury necessitating surgical consultation, a large laceration, a degloving injury, or a crush injury, if they have large burns, all of those, the patient probably should not be cleared, even if they do not appear distracted. That's the thing. It's a painful, distracting injury, not necessarily that the patient is distracted by it. The argument would be from the folks that did the study that if they have a femur fracture, even if they look totally fine and paying attention to what you're doing, they probably should not be cleared. And then they add one last criteria, and that is any injury producing acute functional impairment, meaning, to my mind, that if the patient is distracted, you shouldn't clear them. Meaning if they had a stubbed toe, but they seem really upset about it and they're not listening to you talk about taking off their C-spine collar, that's also a distracting injury. So if they have any injury that might cause distraction, the ones we listed, you don't clear them. And if they have any injury that's a joke and yet they are distracted, you don't clear them. Now, there are quite a few trials in the literature, and I put some of them in the show notes, saying that Nexus doesn't work for trauma patients. Some of these are sick blunt trauma patients, and they say Nexus doesn't work. Others are regular trauma patients. A lot of this is coming out of the folks from Virginia. And the way they did their studies, they're probably right. But the thing is, if you apply the criteria the way I just stated, which really I think is far, far more in depth than most of us have been familiar with, I don't think Nexus misses anyone. It's just a lot of the patients you thought could be cleared by Nexus really can't by the criteria created by that trial. If you realize that what the mental status actually has to be is a patient completely paying attention to you, that they would have been able to remember three objects at 5 minutes, meaning anyone who's in the midst of a trauma room resuscitation really would never pass that. If you start jabbing IVs in and you're rolling them and sticking fingers in various bodily orifices, guess what? They're not remembering my lab coat, the pen, and the button in 5 minutes, and they shouldn't be cleared. So no, Nexus won't work in the sick trauma patient and should never be applied to them. I think Nexus probably does have a sensitivity of 100% if you did it the way the original author set down. Most people don't do it that way, and I think that's where the problems start. So if the patient is cleared by the real Nexus, I think you could stop. What if they can't be? Well, then you're going to image, unless the reason they're not getting cleared is midline tenderness. Let's talk about midline tenderness. It's the one we haven't mentioned yet, and that was deliberate. I think a lot of people do midline tenderness wrong. What they do is they jam their hand on the back of the patient's neck, and they say, "Does this hurt?" And any patient with any degree of musculotenderness is going to say yes, because you're pushing on areas that are next to the muscles. I don't do it that way. I get in front of the patient and I look at their face and I don't say, "Does this hurt?" I just push on each of the vertebrae. Now, if the patient grimaces or makes a facial expression or closes their eyes, that's tenderness. If the patient says spontaneously, "Ow, that hurts," that's tenderness. But I do not say, "Does this hurt?" and jam on their neck, because the answer is always going to be yes if they just had a car crash. And that's in keeping with the criteria outlined in the study. Let's say all the other stuff was negative, but the patient did have that midline tenderness as I describe. Do you now send them to the CT scan? I think the answer is no. I think what you do at this point is you apply the Canadian C-spine rules. I think you use these two in sequence, Nexus, then CCR. I think if you look at the show notes, you'll find an algorithm showing how I do that. But a patient with midline tenderness and none of the other criteria for Nexus, I feed them into the Canadian C-spine rule at the point where the CCR would say, does the patient have midline tenderness? And what this will force you to do is determine that the patient is between 16 and 65, that they have at least one of the low-risk criteria, and they have none of the high-risk mechanisms. And if they fulfill all that, then you're able to range them 45 degrees in either direction. And that's key. We talk about that. You don't grab the patient's head and move it to the left and right 45 degrees. They have to do it actively. And it's not, does it hurt? It's allowed to hurt. It's, are they able to range left and right 45 degrees? If they have a ligamentous injury, they will stop. They will feel the worst sensation they've ever felt in their life, which is something in their neck giving away, and they will not go any further. And the huge numbers in the Canadian C-spine will tell us that these patients will not pith themselves as a result of trying that, so long as you verify all the other stuff first. So, first Nexus, if they only have midline tenderness, nothing else, feed into Canadian C-spine. Make sure they were the right age, they have at least one low-risk factor, and then no high-risk mechanisms. Check the show notes for the full scoop on that. And if they are able to be cleared by Canadian C-spine, I think it's just fine. Nexus shows midline tenderness, feed into Canadian, because you're going to avoid imaging. And that is really important, because if they fail the sequence of Nexus and Canadian C-spine, you're going to send them to imaging. And guess what? Plain films at this stage of the game probably should not be what you send them to. Plain films take longer. They're more expensive. And they don't pick up injuries. There's too many articles for me to list showing this, that plain films miss injuries. Some of them insignificant. Some of them little transverse process fractures. Some of them significant. Some of them the patient would need to be in a collar for weeks. Some of them the patient requires operative fixation. Plain films miss injuries. C-spine CT with three-axis reconstructions are what you want to image the cervical spine. That's coming from the radiological societies. That's coming from EAST, the Eastern Association of Surgeons for Trauma, the most evidence-based of the trauma surgeon societies. If you haven't seen them, go to east.org and check out their guidelines. Best stuff out there for trauma evidence-based medicine. They recommend no plain films. Cervical spine CT is the way to go. And if you're going to expose that patient's thyroid to a lot of radiation, you should only do it after applying those decision rules we mentioned. So if they fail the decision rules, Nexus, CCR, and sequence, you send them for cervical spine CT. C-spine CT is positive. Call your friendly neighborhood spine surgeon. What do you do if it's negative? Well, you're not done yet. You don't just come to that patient, rip off their C-collar, and call it a day. That's not what you do. You still have to clear their C-spine. There are still ligamentous injuries missed by cervical spine CT. There are certainly ligamentous and bony injuries missed by plain film. So you will never clear patients after the radiology without examining them first. You go to the patient, you make sure they're at the point where they're fully awake, where they're fully basically meeting all of those criteria of Nexus. And then while the front of the collar is left on, you unhook that Velcro, releasing the back to let you get your hand back there. And now again, I do one more check of tenderness. And again, I don't ask them, does this hurt? And if they have any significant tenderness still, then you probably either leave them in the collar and send them to neurosurgery, or you get an MRI. Some would argue flex extension. I think those are pretty much garbage, especially during the acute phase of the injury where the patient's still going to be splinting. So I would do one of those two. I'd send those patients to MRI or just put them in a nice Miami J collar, send them out, follow up at neurosurge, at which point 3 days from now, their exam probably will resolve and they'll be able to be cleared. I would say, based on all the stuff out there, and there was just another article published in the Annals this month, you can't clear a patient with significant persistent tenderness just by CT scan. And I'll put that article in the show notes. Now, you know, if they have a little perivertebral pain, sure, I'll go to the next step, because the next step is still not saying they're clear. The next step, if they have no pain or very, very mild pain, is to again have them range 45 degrees in either direction. Now, I would argue, and the Canadian C-spine studies back it up, that this is the way to exclude ligamentous injury. If the patient's able to range 45 degrees in either direction, chances are negative CT, 45 degree ranging, no crazy amounts of midline tenderness, they are now done. And that is how I clear my C-spines. Just for kicks and bonus, I have them lift their head off the bed, make sure that doesn't hurt after I've done everything else. Have them tilt their head back and look up at the wall behind them if they're supine, or up at the ceiling if they're sitting up. And that I just do as one added little step, but there's no evidence for that stuff. So basically, it's the 45 degrees left and right that matters. And then you send them out with some pain meds if you've gotten it to that point. But if they can't range, you put that collar right back on and you send them for an MRI. Because if they can't range 45 degrees in either direction, then I am worried they might have a sciwaka. Now, what's a sciwaka? We know sciwara, which is spinal cord injury without radiographic abnormality. What's a sciwaka? Well, sciwara is dead. Sciwara was predicated on missed injuries from plain films. And we know there's a ton of injuries you can miss on plain films. It's not even worth having that term. So we need sciwaka, spinal cord injury without CT abnormality. CT abnormality. Can those happen? Yes, they can. And because they can, it brings up the next point of discussion, which is, what do you do after the CT is negative on the obtunded patient, on the patient who can't cooperate with a clearance exam? Well, I think the answer is easy for you folks in the emergency department. You leave the collar on. Never in the ED should you ever, ever, ever clear the collar of an obtunded patient on the predication of a negative CT scan. What about you ICU folks? What should you do? This is a point of contention in the literature. Now, each study will show different numbers. My experience when I was at shock trauma was approximately 1 in 3,000 patients will have a clinically significant, meaning you could pith them if you screw this up, injury with a negative CT scan. So ligamentous injury that's unstable with a perfectly normal CT. 1 in 3,000 was the numbers I saw. The numbers of injuries is going to be even higher, but most of these would have done okay even if you missed it. You might get a lawsuit for persistent pain, but you won't get a lawsuit for a quadriplegic patient. So if it is 1 in 3,000, then any studies out there saying clearance based on CT is a good idea better have probably at least 10,000 patients in it. If they have 300 patients, I don't trust that study. I believe, and any of my listeners out there, correct me if I'm wrong, the Brits have gone to clearance based on CT scan. Why? Well, when you factor in all the problems of leaving the cervical spine collar on for a long time, all of the cost and danger of taking a critically ill patient to MRI, maybe 1 in 3,000 is actually not worth finding if the expense is pressure ulcers that could result in infection from the cervical collar, patients losing their airway at MRI, patients crashing out at MRI. Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe we should just let that 1 in 3,000 be missed, because probably more patients will be harmed by trying to find them. And the math probably works to support that viewpoint. We're in the States where I practice, where that kind of logic doesn't fly yet, as much as folks like David Newman and myself would like that to happen. We're just not there yet. So at this stage of the game, I think you have to either leave them in a collar or get an MRI in the United States. Folks are trying to change this. The EAST guidelines leaves that as an option, says if that's what you do in your center, we're not going to say that's bad. I think that's wonderful. So go with your institutional policy. But in the ED, never clear a patient based on a CT scan if they are obtunded and cannot cooperate with your clearance exam after imaging. All right, let's stop there. Just to bring it all home, use Nexus and Canadian C-Spine in sequence. We don't want to have to image these patients if we could avoid it. Check the show notes for how to do that. If you are going to image, CT is the way to go. Plain films miss injuries, important injuries sometimes. Don't use plain films to image the C-spine. If you have such a low pretest probability that you think plain films are okay, they probably should have been cleared by one of the two rules. I send my patients for CT. That's what all the organizations are recommending now. If you don't have CT scan and you have to use plain films, make sure you do a really good clearance exam and make sure those cervical spine x-rays are perfect quality, meaning they missed nothing, meaning that the radiologist or you, if you're interpreting yourself, could see every single vertebrae just the way you've learned during your emergency medicine residency training. If the patient has a negative CT, you still need to do the clearance exam, which means check for tenderness one more time. If they have no tenderness or just a little bit of tenderness that you think's muscular, range them 45 degrees in either direction before you clear their C-spine. And if they're obtunded, do not do C-spine clearance in the ED. It might very well be when they get to their ICU that the spinal surgeons will clear that patient, but don't do it in the ED. So that's the last MCRIT episode for 2011. I hope you liked it. There will be another 5-minute episode published today on the hard six, the six folks I discovered in 2011 that I like a lot. Second part of the Dirty Dozen of 2010. Check that out. Listen to that as well. Go to the blog to see that post with all the links to the great people I discovered in 2011. Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying bye-bye.